today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown.
It's Talkin' Rock with Lizzie Hale from Hailstorm. Today we talk about a lot of topics, including her recent appearance on the WWE Evolution pay-per-view. People ask me all the time, they're like, how does Lizzie perform on stage in those gigantic high heels? Of course, I had to ask her about it.
Okay, so all the girls that I know aren't going to play guitar, so I'm going to play guitar, and all the guys that I know aren't going to wear high heels, so I'm going to combine the two.
They have a new record out called Vicious. We talk about the new material and working on it, plus lyrics, and how about this for a little old band from Pennsylvania, playing sold-out shows overseas as well.
Oh, it's incredible. Are you kidding me? I mean, this is literally the definition of living the dream.
We talk about her birthday celebration a couple weeks ago and much more. Lizzie Hale today on Talkin' Rock.
This is Talkin' Rock. Talkin' Rock. Your backstage pass to some of your favorite rock artists. Here's your host, Meltdown.
As always, a big thank you for checking out the Talkin' Rock podcast. If this is your first time, please subscribe if you like this. If you do like it, give it a five-star rating on iTunes, write a review, share it with your friends. I do appreciate that. You can leave us a voicemail if you'd like, 248-586-2988. It's a jam-packed episode here for you today. Coming up after Lizzie, Al Beck steps in, gives us the rock news, the latest on Greta Van Fleet, the guys from Metallica doing Good for Others, as well as Guns N' Roses, Megadeth stories as well, all coming up. Then, finally, normally that would be enough, but we add on top of that, young blues guitarist Jake Kershaw. He's from Western Michigan and making some waves around the country. He actually cut out from school to do this interview with me. He's only 18. He's recently played with Kenny Wayne Shepherd and likes. So we'll talk with Jake coming up here in just a few minutes. But first, it's Lizzie Hale. I had to ask her about the WWE pay-per-view Evolution that she was part of a couple weeks back and how that whole experience was.
Oh, man, it's just such an incredible thing to be a part of. I'm fairly new to the wrestling scene. I've had a lot of friends who have been into it for years. And you know, because I've immersed my full attention into music, you know, never really got into it. And now I'm like new fan, complete new fan, and complete new respect for what these men and women do. And, you know, when they approached me about doing something for, literally, this is the first all-women's, you know, match, you know, on pay-per-view, and it's awesome. It's called Evolution, and they were talking about it. I'm like, oh, yeah, absolutely. Anything you need from me, let me know. And so about, like, 2 weeks out, they're like, hey, we got this idea. We're going to get you and Nita Strauss, and we wrote this, like, 2-minute, 13-song called Evolution, and we did it to your specs. It's so funny when I got there. They're like, yeah, we listened to, like, your top 5 songs on Spotify, made sure it was the right key for you so you can do your thing. I'm like, you guys are so freaking nuts. So it was so amazing to be a part of.
Now, I couldn't tell that. I just saw the video like a couple times, but did you have your ultra high heels on and stuff out there on that walkway?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, yeah. That's kind of like your trademark, right?
Go big or go home.
Yeah. Yeah, people ask me all the time. They're like, how does she play in those high heels? You probably get that question all the time.
Very carefully. You know, honestly, it's become such a weird thing. You know, I started wearing heels when I was a teenager because it was, okay, so all the girls that I know aren't going to play guitar, so I'm going to play guitar, and all the guys that I know aren't going to wear high heels, so I'm going to combine the two. So that was the long and short of it. But now I'm so used to it that, like, when we're in sound check and I am playing around with my pedal board, especially my wah pedal, it's not the same in flats. I kind of need to wear the heels in order to, like, operate everything properly now, because it's just become an extension of me. So it's becoming a problem.
Yeah. I thought in the back of my head, I thought maybe you had the Ronnie James Dio syndrome, where you were, like, so much shorter than the guys or something, you had to kind of make it up on stage.
I'm fairly normal. I'm 5'8 normally without flats. But I will tell you that when I crashed a prom, when I was 17, I crashed a prom with a friend, and I made sure to wear flats because that was the year where I got tall, but none of the guys had gotten tall yet. So I wanted to make sure I could have a dance.
Yeah, I tell all the girls around here, like our riff rock girls and stuff, they have to wear flats around me since I'm 5'6". And sometimes they do and sometimes they don't, but that's the way it goes. Hey, so you talk about the prom and stuff like that. I mean, you guys obviously come from a small town in Pennsylvania. What's it like to go overseas and play to packed houses to see your band?
Oh, it's incredible. Are you kidding me? I mean, this is literally the definition of living the dream. You know, I'm traveling the world, doing what I love with the people I love and with my little brother. on drums. It's funny because little bro and I have had a lot of those, like, God, remember when, you know, kind of moments with each other. And he brought this, we were talking about, like, when we're going to our first gigs, you know, in Central PA, and it was like, okay, we have one gig this month. It's going to be awesome. You know, playing for like two people and the sound guy at a place called Fiddlesticks or something like that, you know? And I remember we were stuck in traffic at one point in time and kind of complaining to each other. And little bro turns to me. This is when he was like, I think 11 or 12, something like that. And he's like, Liz, where do you think where all these people are going? And I'm like, I don't know, man. Shut up. You know, like a little brother, shut up. And he's like, no, seriously, where are all these people going? I'm like, well, you know, that guy's probably going to work. He looks like he's going to work. They're going to school. You know, he's like, yeah, but we're going to a gig. I'm like, you know what? You're right. You're absolutely right. It's still the same dynamic, and it's still like just so mind blowing to be playing like, you know, sold out shows overseas. Like, people come to see your little band that you started when you were kids, and for some weird reason, you're still doing it, and people still care. It's really neat. It's just truly mind blowing to all of us.
Yeah, that's good for you, man. I'm really happy for you guys. So the new record is out, Vicious, of course. And I mean, how excited was it to get out there and play new music after touring for years and years with the old stuff? Now you got this brand new, fresh batch of material.
Oh, it's amazing. It just, you know, every time you put out new material, it's both exciting and nerve-wracking at the same time, because, you know, you could love something so much and not the, you know, there's a big percentage that the whole world isn't going to agree with you. So the fact that it's been received so absolutely overwhelmingly positive, and I think, honestly, this is the first record where, like, I haven't even had to explain anything. I remember, like, last record, and I think the record before that, having to, like, explain to fans, no, this is what I wrote this about. No, this is, you know, whatever. And they're just, our fans are just grabbing on and doing their thing. And it's just, it's amazing to see. It was amazing to go overseas so early in the cycle, too. Like, so we just released the record, and then we went, you know, overseas on tour. And it's been great to, like, just hear everybody singing the words and seeing certain demographics just grabbing on to, you know, whatever songs that they are, you know. So it's been amazing.
Yes, yeah. I jotted down here lyrics. You're a big lyrics person, aren't you?
Yeah, so for some reason, the guys in my band trust me with words. I'm still not sure why, but that's kind of my bag in the band over the years. They're like, yeah, you can do something, right? I'm like, sure. let me go to the workshop.
Is there ever stuff that you guys wrote, maybe even in these sessions here for this one, where you're like, this just doesn't sound Hailstorm, or is it like, let's just throw everything out there?
Oh, absolutely. Well, I'm a kind of a kitchen sink type of person. I say yes first and then I figure it out later. Mm-hmm. So it's the same thing with songwriting. I'm just kind of chasing whatever gets me excited. And then, I mean, I have hard drives full of like non-Hailstorm songs, just like songs that like it seriously sounds like it could be Katy Perry or Taylor Swift or something like that, that almost immediately you're like, yep, no. But then there are some songs on the opposite end of that. There are some songs like, for instance, one of our songs called Do Not Disturb that I was just writing. It actually started off as a like a synth song. I was into these kind of like synth dance, like retro, like kind of like weird 80s, you know, almost Ministry, but not quite, more pop appeal thing. I went through a phase. I'll just put it that way. And I was writing this song, just kind of recanting my own experience of some fun times that I had had. And I showed it to the guys. I'm like, check this out. And the guys are like, dude, we have to like show that to Nick. Like, we could totally, you know, record that. I'm like, oh, no, we're not recording this. This is ridiculous. You know, it's just a ridiculous like sex song with a synth part. And they're like, no, check this out. And so like Joe went down, he's like, check this out. Like, I'll do like your synth part on guitar. And Josh had this awesome bass line. I'm like, okay, I guess we're doing this then. Sure. So it works both ways. You know, I think that the initial thought is always just, okay, chase what gets you excited. And then you can decide later whether it's right for the record or not.
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah, because I think you said something along the same lines of the first single that was released as well. But it's like, it wasn't one of those songs that you were really writing. And all of a sudden, it just kind of comes full circle. Next thing you know, it's a song.
Yeah, exactly. Like, well, you know, something happened there. We're just going to trust it, not question it too much, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I talked to Stephen Richards from Taproot yesterday, and he still wants to apologize for apparently a mishap you guys had with the merchandise several years ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
He says you guys both played a club in New Jersey or something, and somewhere along the line your merch stayed there, and then they went to give it to you, and their vehicle got ransacked or something.
Oh, dude, I do remember that. That was years ago.
Right,
that's
right.
Crazy. Dude, they have no need to apologize. These things do happen.
Hey,
and you know what? There's probably a bunch of like old school Hailstorm shirts running around somewhere in the world because of that.
Final thing.
Demand,
yeah, that's right. There you go. Final thing here for you, because they're going to cut me off here. First of all, thanks for taking the time. November 27th at the Fillmore with Hailstorm. And your birthday was just a few weeks ago. Did you do anything crazy for your birthday or what?
No, you know, what's funny. It's like we always kind of have a birthday overseas. And so we were in Copenhagen and the whole crew surprised me with like they practically filled the bus with balloons. And then we went out to dinner and had a cool hang. Yeah, no, it was not as crazy as some of my previous birthdays, you know, getting into the 30s here. but still a lot of fun.
All right, Lizzie. Well, listen, get on to your other interviews. We appreciate it. We'll see you here in Detroit Rock City in a few weeks.
Hell yeah, man. Thank you so much for taking the time for me, as always.
All right, Lizzie, thank you. We'll talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon, Arlen. Thank you.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Al Beck joins us with some rock news and pretty good stuff right there from Lizzie Hale. She's always so easy to talk to. You've met her before, right?
Actually, I have not.
You haven't?
No.
She's one of the nicest people in this business.
I've heard nothing but great things about her.
No,
yeah.
She's great, man. I'll never forget when she told me one time that Ronnie James Dio told her. Of course, she was on that big, you know, Dio compilation where they did all the covers and whatnot. And she's like on the front cover, you know, they drew a picture of her like charging, you know, at her and at the picture and everything. Anyways, she told me, she goes, Ronnie told me one time, you know, you'll never remember the names of their faces, but they'll always remember you, so be nice to everybody. And that's so true. It's like, I meet people all the time, they go, hey, you remember me? And I really don't.
Yeah.
But I just hope I wasn't a jerk to them.
Yeah, I know that happens to me too, but it's on such a smaller scale. But these people do it all the time with all their meet and greets and stuff like that. But she's right. They'll always remember that.
Right. And by the way, mine is on a much smaller scale than hers too. I'm not saying that. I mean, a ton of people.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying you and I both, we have on a much smaller scale, but yeah, we have a similar experience.
Just last night, some guy came up to me at my son's hockey practice. He goes, hey, remember me? We did a hockey shootout. I don't remember.
That sounds like you.
It does.
It does sound like something you've done. But before I get into the news I had, you mentioned, you know, Ronnie James Dio. I did see a story earlier that they've got like 100 dates set up for his
hologram. I know, the hologram thing. Boy, that seems kind of strange. Yeah. I don't know. I was talking about this on the radio yesterday. It's like, you know, I was lucky enough to see Ronnie James Dio in person, and I had a chance to meet him too. And first of all, he's like 5'3", which was like smaller than me, so that's really cool for me. I towered over the guy.
Yeah.
So,
you don't get that very often.
No,
amongst anyone older than 11.
Exactly. All right. At 5'6", that is tough. So, but anyways, yeah, I saw that hologram thing. Yeah, man, I don't know. I'm kind of torn. I don't know. We'll see what happens. And he's going to have that Last in Line or Dio's Disciples or something playing.
I don't think the hologram thing is creepy, but it's like you're going out to see this thing. It's kind of like seeing a DVD, but you got to go. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a little Star Wars-ish to me.
Fair enough.
So I was thinking maybe we could just do a hologram interview too, a deal on the Talkin' Rock podcast.
Sounds good.
Maybe I could take an old interview I did and splice it up, or several of them, that, you know, and just splice them up.
Perfect. I think it's a great idea that'll never happen. But anyway, in rock news today, I thought this was kind of interesting. So now, Greta Van Fleet, one of the bands that's really taking the world by storm right now. They sell out venues all over the country.
One of the bands in the world that really gets a reaction out of people, good or bad.
Yeah, I remember we were at a show with Rob Zombie, and they were on the bill as well. They were both playing the main stage.
Right.
And Rob Zombie like, everyone stop! And he like ran to the back because he wanted to watch these kids play.
Yeah, I saw him walk up there, him and Sherry, and they were just kind of standing on the side of the stage. You're like, okay. And this wasn't like 3 weeks ago. This was September of 2017.
Yeah, this was over a year ago that this happened we record this.
He wanted to check out the buzz on the band.
But what some people maybe don't know about Greta Van Fleet, these kids from Frankenmuth, Michigan, is that they are three out of four are brothers.
Right.
And I don't know if you realize that or not, but they were kind of talking about their sibling rivalry because they say they do actually get into a lot of arguments.
I can imagine.
When they're writing music and stuff.
Two of them are twins.
Yeah, two of them are twins. There's a third brother, and then, of course, there's another one.
Yeah, Danny the drummer. He's just a friend. Yeah.
He's just there. But they did say that all of the arguments they tend to have with the band are all artist-related. So they get into it, they resolve it, but when they walk away, it's okay. They kind of leave it there, you know?
Well, we're going to talk to Jake Kershaw coming up here in a few minutes. He's a blues rock guitar player. He's 18 years old from the western side of Michigan. I'll have to ask him about Greta Van Fleet because, man, we're getting some starting to percolate with some pretty good young rock talent here in Michigan. But, yeah, Greta Van Fleet's a great band to see live if you get a chance. Here's my thing. You know, just like with Nickelback, people either hate them or they love them. But you know what?
Yeah.
They're selling out every place they go. So I don't think, you know.
Yeah, the new album is available now, and it's definitely worth checking out if you have not yet. Moving on to Metallica, who just over the weekend they participated in the All Within My Hands Foundation Helping Hands concert and auction. That's a mouthful, but it's helping to raise money. It was in San Francisco, November the 3rd, and $1.3 million raised for food banks in the area.
You know, it's really good on them because, let's face it, man, they've made a ton of money. Yeah. Those guys are worth so much money and to give back like that. And they always do stuff for San Francisco. They've done stuff here as well. But
And I know this is like old news for those guys, but the whole Napster thing, too, they kind of got a little bit of a... kind of got some heat from people, like, don't you have enough money? They didn't do that for themselves. It was for the Greta Van Fleets, the up-and-comers. Like, come on, man. Like, buy these kids music, you know?
Yeah, I know. But that was always, like, a big bugaboo with a lot of people. And especially for younger people that never saw it, Lars had that whole thing where they had to, remember the cartoon characters?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's bad.
Yeah.
That was classic stuff. So, well, good on those guys for doing that.
And speaking of Metallica, of course, they've got their World Wired tour that's going on right now. They do currently have dates announced through next summer, through August, I believe. But Lars Ulrich is saying that this is going to continue through early 2020. So we're hearing that there's some dates that aren't announced yet.
Yeah, and by the way, if you haven't seen Metallica live, I don't know what you're waiting for. I mean, these guys are the kings for a reason. There's no question about that. But, you know, that record's so good, and I think that they can tour on it for a long time like that. I just heard somebody talking about that record they did with Lou Reed not that long ago.
Yeah.
That record is one of the biggest hunks of garbage I've ever listened to. I mean, Saint Anger is terrible, but this record's even worse. Yeah. But Hardwired is fantastic.
I love Hardwired. And I'm one of those hardcore 80s Metallica fans. I like the first four albums and the rest of it. You know, like, they've got their things here and there. But Hardwired is on there. I love that album. And, you know, that's the other thing, too. Being a fan of the early stuff that I am, the first time I ever saw those guys, you know, I was going with my buddy, and we're both old school fans, and we're kind of doing the whole, like, all right, if there's one song that you've got, which one do you want to hear? I had like four, and we're talking things like Metal Militia, you know, Hit the Lights, Deep Cuts.
Right.
And he's going, dude, all four would be great, but you know, you might not even get one of those, right? Those are pretty deep. I said, yeah, I know. All four of them they played.
Really?
Like, they play their whole catalog.
Yeah.
And Lars is the one who keeps track of that and makes sure that every city gets a different experience when they come back.
Yeah, they've been doing in different cities. They've been actually, I guess in Pittsburgh, they played Aaliyah from Donny Iris because he's from Pittsburgh, right?
Oh, yeah.
That shows you the lack of musical history in Pittsburgh, by the way. It's like when you're Metallica and you're playing Aaliyah, that means you had to practice that somewhere.
Yeah.
Let's see, Pittsburgh. Yeah. How about this Aaliyah song? Anyways, I digress.
Well, another band that's huge on the stage is Guns N' Roses, and they were never going to get back together, but they did not in this lifetime tour. So far, they have played to more than 5 million fans on this tour.
Well, I was one of them, two, twice? Yeah, at least twice.
Yeah.
No, three times. Saw him in the I saw him in two stadiums. I saw him in an arena. But yeah, man, great shows. Love those guys. And then Slash told me a couple months ago that, you know, I mean, there is a possibility that Guns N' Roses will put out some new music somewhere down the road.
I mean, I feel pretty confident that something's going to happen, and there's no deadline on it, so I couldn't tell you when. But I feel pretty, you know, secure in saying that we're going to do something, you know, so it'll happen when it happens. As with any Guns N' Roses thing, you just sort of have to, you can't put any restraints on time.
All right, there's Slash from Guns N' Roses, and finally, Al Beck's going to wrap things up here with a story about Dave Mustaine and Megadeth.
Yeah, that's right, and it's great as it would be to get some new Guns N' Roses material. It looks almost certain. No, it is certain that we are getting some new Megadeth. They have been working on their follow-up to Dystopia, which we've mentioned before in the podcast. I'm a big fan of that album, Dystopia.
That is a good record.
So good. I think it's really good. It's one of the better, newer Metallica albums. Wow, Dave would kick me right in the ass for that one.
Yeah, you know.
Well, there's a faux pas for you. But yeah, one of the better, newer Megadeth albums, I think, is Dystopia. But he said that all the guys have been kind of working on their own. They've got this like central, sort of like a Dropbox or a central SharePoint type of thing where they all keep the same material, they all have access to it, and now they're saying he's about 95% sure that we're going to get a new album in 2019 from Megadeth, and if not, on that 5% chance that we don't, he's 100% sure we're at least going to get a new single in 2019.
And then, of course, they're going on tour opening up for Ozzy as well, so that'll be pretty cool. In early 2019, you can check out the websites for all the dates on that with Megadeth and Ozzy. Two, I mean, just killer bands to see live. Have you ever seen Megadeth live?
I have seen them a few times, yeah.
They're good. I mean, Dave's great, man. Yeah. So is Ozzy.
You know what? He's got a shtick that he does every time, and I love it every time. They'll come out and play five songs. Then Dave Mustaine will get on the microphone and say, I don't have a lot of time. I want to play. You're not going to hear much from me. And then he'll just play for the next hour.
Well, I've seen him talk before, and He goes out on stage and he talks. And then David Ellison and Kiko, the guitar player there, they walk behind the amps.
Yeah.
And Dave talks up there on the stage by himself.
Yeah.
And then when they start playing, it's like, shh, shh, and the guys walk out and they start playing again.
Yeah.
It's like, it's like he clears the stage to talk. So,
well, that's Dave.
Anyhow, all right, Al, thanks so much for the rock news day. Hey, Jake Kershaw, like I mentioned before, he's an 18-year-old guitar player from Western Michigan. Hey, Jake, how's things, man?
Doing pretty good, man. How about yourself?
So tell everybody about yourself, man. What's your story?
Yeah, well, my name is Jake Kershaw. I just turned 18 about couple weeks ago in October.
Now, how come you're not in school, first of all?
Well, the story about that is I just signed myself out so I could do this interview. So I should be in AP statistics right now.
Okay.
This is a bit more important.
All right. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, you're fine. But I'm a professional guitar player and singer, and I travel with my band, and I love to play blues rock, and I sing songs, I write songs, so I'm a singer-songwriter. And I just love what I do. I love playing guitar, I love playing music, and a lot of cool things have happened to me in a really short amount of time.
Yeah, now the other day I saw that you played with Kenny Wayne Shepherd, who I just had on a recent podcast as well. He was here in the studio, so tell me about that experience.
I played with him up at Birch Run, opened up for him, and that was really cool. It was kind of a rush setting. It was a fly show for him, but I got to meet him again this time and talk gear and amps and stuff like that. And he, you know, talked me through some of the record business and everything that happens inside of that. And so it was really cool. He's a super chill dude, way down to earth, and he's a heck of a guitar player.
Yeah, what kind of stuff do you learn from a guy like that? I mean, obviously outside of like gear and stuff, but I mean, just watching him, what do you learn?
Stage presence, how he conducts himself on stage, and how he does his solos, how he builds his solos, and also beyond the music, the industry part, the business part, what to look for when, you know, labels are after you, or you know, how to book this, what to look into when you're going into this form of the business. It's just a lot of little things that we're starting to deal with right now. You gave me a couple tips on.
Did he ever mention not to talk to DJs at rock stations in Detroit? Did he say anything about that or no?
He did not.
No.
It wouldn't be good if he did.
No, that's no doubt. So when did you pick up a guitar?
I picked up a guitar at about age 10. My mom wanted me to play piano, but we couldn't really fit a giant piano in our house at the time, so we got a guitar.
Is that right? And then, so what kind of guitarist do you gravitate towards?
A guitarist, you said?
Yeah.
It's kind of a number of things. I used to love the old metal songs with, you know, Van Halen and Scorpions and all that. And I gravitated towards more of a bluesy edge. And now I'm sort of gravitating towards the rock edge. So it's blues rock. So like John Mayer and Johnny Lang, a tad of Joe Bonamassa, maybe a little bit of Kenny Moon Shepherd, some Tab and Y, Eric Gales. Like sort of the modern form of it. I just love where the blues is pushing into rock and roll. So they're two of my really favorite genres.
Now, you're a young kid and stuff, so, I mean, obviously, like, you know, blues rock has been around for a real long time, and then, of course, you know, like a band like Black Sabbath comes in, and they kind of take it in a totally different direction. Is any of that stuff kind of, do you like any of that kind of stuff?
I do, yeah. Any variation of blues rock, I love. I love Black Sabbath. A lot of those really cool bands like that. Warren Haynes, just got to see him. It was super cool just to see a different way to put blues and sort of an Allman Brothers spin on the blues. Anything that spins the blues around in a different direction, I enjoy, you know, whatever way it goes.
Now, are you, you know, by a description, a sad or depressed person to be able to play the blues?
No, I mean, everyone has their times. I wouldn't say that.
I'm just kidding. Because it's sometimes like back in the day, it's like, you know, you got to kind of have the blues to play the blues, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, that was the thing. That's where it came from. But now you can just kind of hop up there and do it.
So, like I said, you're young. You're 18 years old. Are you constantly like discovering, you know, bands that like perhaps I may have grown up with and have known about for like 30 years? I mean, do you ever listen, like, I don't know, I'll just throw it out there, like, you know, the guitar solos from, like, you know, Pink Floyd and stuff like that?
Happens every single day. I'll be doing an online class and I'll listen to music, but, oh, what's that? And be like, oh, that's a classic song I never heard before. So that happens all the time. Pink Floyd, Deep Purple, just a lot of really old stuff that, you know, it was kind of popular, I guess, like you said, in your day, but it's really cool because that puts a different music form in your mind. It gives you something to lean on when you're playing. So, yeah, I do that a lot.
Yeah, that's cool, man. What kind of, when you see guys like, you know, Greta Van Fleet and stuff from Michigan here, does that give you a little inspiration?
It does, yeah. Michigan, I know they got Ted Nugent here. You know, Michigan doesn't really have a whole lot of, you know, California like superstars come out of it. So to see a young band sort of my age come out is quite the inspiration. I think they're doing absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. And did you grow up liking Ted? I mean, are you a Ted fan? You like that kind of style too?
I do like Ted. I love his guitar playing, man. It's just a very raw feel. I don't think you can get more raw on a guitar than what he puts through it.
Yeah, I got you. So what other kind of guitar players inspire you at such a young age?
Some of the old country western guys, a little bit of, I don't, like, not really, but sort of. I like Chet Atkins. I like Tommy Emmanuel, who's not really country western, but you know, I like some of the classic players. I like a lot of the blues players. I don't really know what else to do. Oh, yeah, Vince Gill.
Vince Gill, yeah.
Vince Gill, I like some of that. I mean, the blues is cool, but if you want to expand on that and make this a different genre, you have to learn, you know, sort of where everything comes from. So when you're listening to a lick made by John Mayer, you can trace that back to something that, you know, someone else did at a different time. So just kind of learning things around like country and a little bit of jazz, a little bit of fusion, a little bit of rock, sometimes some metal licks sound cool. You know, just a little bit of everything concocted into what I want to do.
Yeah, one of my favorite country guitar players is actually Brad Paisley. What do you think of a guy like that?
Oh, love him. My gosh, so good. He plays Doctor's Amps too, but I'm not the world's, you know, biggest fan of country, but listening to him as an artist and as a guitar player, he's absolutely phenomenal. I think he'll kick anybody's butt in any day. I mean, he's just fantastic.
Yeah. What are your teachers, what kind of advice they give you?
My teachers in school?
Yeah.
Well, most of them don't believe that I'm not going to college and I'm going to pursue this. And they would recommend me that I get a backup plan together, maybe, you know, take some classes here or there. But I don't want to waste too much of my time on something else when I know something like this is going really good for me. So they told me to, you know, kind of watch myself, be careful with your decisions. But for the most part, they seem to support it.
And your parents?
In all honesty, mom is having a bit of trouble with me not going to college, which I see. You know, she wants me to have a good future. But she's gone into it very well, and she accepts it, and she's helped me along the way, and dad's all for it. And I think he has a little bit of hesitance, too, with the college thing, because, you know, they want me to have a good future, but they're both 100% into my career right now, which is super important to me, and I love them a lot. So.
Yeah, it's crazy to have a career when you're only 18. So.
Yeah, it is. It's a lot happening.
Yeah. Well, listen, Jake, thanks so much for the time. Get back to lunch or school or biology or whatever you got to go do right now. Next time you swing by the Motor City in the southeast Michigan part, you come and say hello, okay?
Absolutely, man. Thank you so much for your time.
Good kid right there. Great guitar player. Make sure you check him out. If you're out there in the World Wide Web, just search out Jake Kershaw. And if you're out there, make sure you follow me on Twitter at MeltdownWRIF. You can follow the show as well at TalkingRock1. And, of course, hit us up on the voicemail, too, 248-586-2988. If there's a question, critique, whatever you got going on. And don't forget, five-star ratings and reviews are always appreciated. It's Talking Rock. Got some great guests already lined up, so you're going to want to check back periodically. Like I said, subscribe and check back. And as always, thank you so much for listening.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.